I'm Kerry Hayes, Deputy Chief of Staff at the City of Chattanooga, and you're listening to The Scanner, a podcast from Mayor Andy Burke's Council Against Hate and the American Diversity Report. The Tennessee Immigrant and Refugee Rights Coalition, or TURC, was founded in 2003, but over the last several years have become one of the most important political and policy organizations in the South. The White House's frequent and often jarring changes to federal policies about immigration and refugee resettlement have put TURC at the center of a lot of important conversations about what the impact of these policies look like at the local level. Right now, TURC is celebrating the groundbreaking of a new headquarters facility in the Antioch community of Nashville, but they are active in cities and towns across Tennessee and even some neighboring states, and it's clear that they intend to have an even stronger voice in defending the rights and needs of new Americans in the years ahead. I spoke with Judith Claire June, TURC's policy director, about some of the many battles that TURC is engaged in right now, what she thinks the future holds for the South's refugee population, and what each of us can do to help. Judith, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Happy to do it. So I'm curious, as we start, can you describe for us what TURC is and how you describe your mission right now?
TURC, which stands for the Tennessee Immigrant and Refugee Rights Coalition, is a statewide immigrant and refugee rights group whose mission is to empower immigrants and refugees throughout the state so that we can develop a unified voice and defend our rights. And create basically an atmosphere that is where immigrants and refugees are recognized for our positive contribution to the state.
And for the purposes of your work, how do you define a refugee?
A refugee is a specific immigration status. And a refugee is someone who has fled their country and cannot return because of a well-founded fear of persecution. And so folks who are fleeing their countries usually apply for refugee resettlement and to be resettled to a third country. And so they go through the UN and then through a very intense and detailed vetting process where they are then relocated to a third country that they do not get to choose.
I see. And as it pertains to Tennessee, can you tell us a little bit about the status of Tennessee's refugee population? Who's here? Where are they coming from? What types of situations are they trying to escape? That sort of thing.
So currently, we have a lot of refugees coming from the Democratic Republic of Congo and also Burma. In the past, we've had folks from Somalia and Iraq. And so the top countries change depending on what's going on around the world. For fiscal year 2019, we resettled roughly around 700 people, whereas historically we've resettled in Tennessee around 1,700.
Explain that a little bit. What is happening at the policy level that's causing those numbers to change that way?
So for the past few years, especially under this current administration, the refugee resettlement program has been drastically reduced. And so whereas the United States has historically welcomed around 95,000 refugees per year, for the past couple of years, that number has been gradually reduced. And so in his first year, the Trump administration, President Trump reduced the numbers to 45,000 and then later on to 30,000. And now for this upcoming fiscal year, the numbers have been reduced to 18,000, which is really, really drastic, especially considering that we have millions of people who are displaced worldwide and hundreds of thousands of folks who are waiting in refugee camps throughout the world. And so in a time where I would argue that we should be opening our doors and really striving to meet the need, we are instead choosing to close our doors.
And I want to dig into that a little bit, but I'm curious before we do if you can comment about what the experience is for families or individuals that are seeking refuge in the United States and do end up in Tennessee or in the South. What is their lived experience like? How do they arrive here? What do they tend to encounter in communities and states like ours?
I won't be able to give you the full picture of their lived experience because I haven't lived that. But from talking to a lot of our members and hearing their stories, it's really heartbreaking to hear of folks who have spent Some of them have spent decades in refugee camps, right? 10 years or more waiting to be resettled. And so folks are really grateful when they do get an opportunity to start their lives over. And so we have folks who have started businesses or getting married, starting their families in Tennessee and really making this place home and having a second chance. And also who are still working and advocating for the refugee resettlement program because they recognize that while they may have had this opportunity, there are many others who are still waiting to be resettled. And many folks who have been resettled still have families who are waiting in the pipeline. And so people are especially grateful and really glad to start over and have this new opportunity, but also recognizing that there are many, many others who are still waiting.
Sure. And for those individuals who may still be waiting, I wanted to hear your thoughts on some of the federal policy changes that have been taking place. I think you and I were introduced when Turek had contacted Mayor Burke's office regarding a White House directive that changed the way that cities and states and localities need to proactively affirm that they are willing to welcome refugees still, which Mayor Burke certainly did. Explain that a little bit. What was that change, and can you theorize about why it may have been done and what the impact is going to be on states like Tennessee?
In September of this year, President Trump issued an executive order that essentially requires states and localities to affirmatively consent or opt in to continuing refugee resettlement. And so in the past, states' sort of refugee resettlement was determined by the federal government of where, consultation with states, of course, but the federal government had that responsibility. But now the executive order essentially allows states to say no to refugees and be able to close their doors. And so all states and localities are now having to submit a consent letter in order to continue resettling refugees. And we are working with folks across the state and working with Governor or in conversation with Governor Lee's office to explain that, you know, Tennessee has been resettling refugees for over 30 years, and the cities have and are consulting with the state in this process and are giving reports. Continuing refugee resettlement is something that we should do. It's something that is in line with our ideals as a state. And so we are urging all of our cities and our localities to definitely continue this program that often people have been doing for decades.
And are you seeing the kind of response from cities and towns throughout Tennessee that you would like to see?
So we are still in conversation with a lot of the officials. We don't have confirmation as of this conversation, but hopefully in the coming days or coming weeks that we'll have some positive final answers.
Good deal. Well, and I know something else that the state is involved with is a lawsuit against the federal government that has to do with claims that the state is being forced to bear some of the costs of refugee resettlement in a way that some feel is unconstitutional. I know that Turek obviously opposes this litigation. I was wondering if you could comment on the nature of that lawsuit a little bit more and what its current status was, as you understand it.
So as I understand, the lawsuit was initially filed, if I believe, in 2017 and was dismissed and has been dismissed multiple times. And the state is currently filing an appeal. And, yeah, so the basis for the lawsuit has been dismissed by the courts multiple times. Refugee resettlement is something that is federally funded. It is not something that the federal government is forcing on the state. Refugee resettlement agencies have been consulting with our state government and giving reports and making sure that it is a consultative process. And so, yes, we are deeply opposed to this lawsuit. It doesn't make sense. Refugees definitely add to our state. They add to the richness of our state. They contribute. They start businesses. They pay their taxes, and generally add to the culture and also to the economy of our state. And so we definitely don't agree that refugees are in any way a burden to the state.
As it relates to the federal policy changes that we're seeing, I'm curious to hear you comment about what that means for you and your colleagues at Turk and what that means in terms of what you're doing differently day to day now than what you were doing as recently as a few years ago. Turk's obviously has been around for a long, long time, but feels as though this world is changing very quickly. And I'm curious about how that's changing what you guys are doing.
For the past few years, especially under this administration, our work has definitely, it feels like it's been a lot more on the defensive. We are dealing and facing with a new proposal or policy, it seems like every week. You know, there's been changes regarding the public charge, which is around how folks who need can access the public services. There are some increases on like citizenship application fees or some proposed increases. Of course, there's what's happening with DACA. Then with TPS, the temporary protected status that the Trump administration proposed to cut. And so it's on every level, there has been attacks on our immigration systems. And I think one of the ways that we have framed it is that the administration's approach has been, on one hand, to keep people out. So that means closing a lot of doors that, you know, folks have historically used to migrate to this country or to be reunited with their families. And another, to also kick people out. So we've seen a lot of, you know, increase in deportations, increase in worksite raids. And so at every level, the administration has been working to make it more difficult for folks to come to this country, but also to stay with their families and be reunited with their loved ones.
And why do you think that is? What is at the root of these decisions that are being made at the federal level?
That is a complicated question, and you know, maybe sometimes not so complicated. I think, you know, from the get-go, this administration definitely has been using immigration as a political wedge to both prey on people's worst fears about the future of this country, and also to really demonize communities whose only goal is to live their lives and be with their loved ones. And so, you know, the administration's rhetoric has unfortunately been a lot about demonizing immigrants. And so I personally think that has a lot to do with like their own xenophobia and their own racism, which is really unfortunate that folks who are just trying to live their lives and be with their families and have a better opportunity for their kids are being demonized in such a way.
And looking back through the local lens, Turk Votes is the name of a 501c4 that's affiliated with Turk that was launched last year and got involved in a couple dozen Metro Council races in Nashville, which is where you're headquartered. I wanted to hear you talk a little bit about the impetus for you guys getting more directly involved in electoral politics and what comes next for Turk Votes, if you can see into the future.
Historically, all of our work, we did all of our work under our C3, and so candidate education, broad, you know, voter education issues, our lobbying at the state level. And so we increasingly started to realize that there were restrictions to the work that we could do, and that a lot of the things that we wanted to do, we pushed it as far as we could go with our C3, and the need to have a C4 branch really was becoming sort of increasingly clear. And so in 2018, we launched our C4, Turk Votes. And that has really transformed our political power and our ability to do a lot more electoral work and sort of voter engagement work. We were able to get involved in this past council elections and endorse candidates who were in line with our values and supportive of communities that we support. And, you know, it was very successful. We turned people out to vote, and 21 out of the 25 candidates that we endorsed won. And we were also able to help elect one of the first Muslim women to any, you know, in any Tennessee office to the council. And she's also the first African immigrant to hold any office in Tennessee. And we also elected the first Latina to serve on Metro Council. And so we are really excited about the possibilities that this has opened, and really excited to get more of our communities involved in the electoral process.
Do you guys anticipate getting involved in anything in 2020 or farther out?
Probably. We are still sort of working on the details and what exactly we will plan on doing.
Well, until then, I'm curious as we wrap up if there are anything specific that people can do in their own communities and their own neighborhoods to help and protect refugees that may be in cities like Chattanooga or Nashville or wherever people are listening to the podcast. Is there anything that you would want the general public to know about this population and what they can do to help?
I would say one of the urgent things that we have is this executive order that, you know, the governor has until December 25th to consent if we want to continue keeping refugee resettlement in Tennessee. And so I would urge everyone to call the governor's office, but also call their mayors and county mayors, and ensure that your city or the governor understands that this is something that we want, and that this is something that Tennessee has been doing for decades, and, you know, this is something that we should continue doing. And also to get involved and hold your elected officials accountable. I think this is a time in our history where we really have to wrestle with, you know, what kind of country we want to be. And so we have to stand up and make sure that our neighbors are protected, that the people who live next to you, who may have a different immigration status, who may speak a different language, who may look different, that folks in our communities are protected. And so ensuring that you are aware of what's happening to your neighbors and that you hold our elected officials accountable to make sure that our cities, our state, and this country actually lives up to our claimed values and ideals.
Well, I think that is a great note to end on. Judah, thank you so much for the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
My thanks again to Judith for her time, which she gave us during a very, very busy week for Turk. Thank you also to Will Davis and his staff at WUTC for their support, and to Katie Wells in Mayor Burke's office for her help in the research and preparation for this episode. If you would like to get more involved with the Mayor's Council Against Hate, we are always looking for new members. You can sign up and get more information about our action teams at our website, which is cha.city/againsthate. You can also find past episodes of this podcast, which is also available on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and all other major services. This is The Scanner, a production of the Council Against Hate and the American Diversity Report. Thank you for listening.